Good morning and welcome to the roundtable and to our panel for this Monday morning. Our first official short day, right?
It really is awful.
We had daylight savings time.
Oh, I love it.
Do you really?
Yeah.
What do you like about that?
Just night closes in early and it's just dark and good.
I can't work. I feel like, it's bedtime.
It's that whole
getting up. Why don't you fly to Rio or something? You'll be fine.
It's a red eye for you, that's all.
It's that whole waking up, coming to work in the dark and going home to work in the dark.
Yeah.
Yeah, quit complaining.
All right, I'll quit complaining. We have a great panel this morning. At least, it looks good on paper.
No, it doesn't.
No, it doesn't? Is that what you said?
Our pictures are really nice on paper.
Yeah, that's true.
So, come on.
And we are going to discuss a myriad of issues. We have a lot to talk about. And, of course, as always, we welcome your input. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Let us begin with the story that is about what is going to be going on today in the Senate, a major test of how carefully Republicans can navigate the intra-party politics of sexuality will come up today when the Senate holds a crucial vote on a bill to outlaw workplace discrimination against gay men, lesbians, and transgender people. The anticipated vote comes 4 months after the Supreme Court invalidated a federal ban on recognizing same-sex marriages and nearly a year after some conservative leaders warned the losses in the 2012 elections exposed the party as being out of touch with much of the country on social issues. With the bill apparently just one vote short of the threshold to prevent a filibuster, the Republican senators believe to be the most persuadable. Rob Portman of Ohio, Dean Heller of Nevada, they're all keeping their positions private. So we're waiting to see what happens today. What do you make of this? And Libby, you raised
your hand very early.
You were rubbing your hands like you were just ready to tear into this.
No, I'm just happy. I think that we will see.
Well, we're not used to that here, so just stop it.
I'm so sorry.
So true.
You can just take that attitude right out of here.
Okay, fine, never mind. So I'm really miserable.
No,
it's great. I think it will. I think they'll get their 60. I think they'll get 61, 62, just so that nobody is the one that actually did it.
Like the bad guy?
Right, like marriage equality passed here in New York, and I think we're going to see.
We won't have a Roy McDonald.
Huh?
We won't have like a Roy McDonald type.
Well, we did have. I mean, the thing is, it passed here with more than the requisite number of votes needed.
Yeah.
It's 31 or 32. So, all of them got targeted. But I think that the GOP is woefully out of step with the mainstream America. The overwhelming majority, I mean, it's like 70% of the people, think we shouldn't be discriminated against in getting a job or housing or public accommodation or education, that sort of stuff. And the other side is their arguments are just so absurd. Like they're going to force your children to be taught by a man in a dress.
Yeah.
I'm like, really? Give me a break. They are so grasping at such straws, and it's about time that this happened. Now, the Senate does it. The House is a different story. The House passed this bill when the Democrats were in control a number of years ago. That's not going to be so quick to happen in the House this year, but if they vote it down this year again, it just gives those of us on the correct side of this issue, the ability, I never want to say the right side because, it's not the right, it's the left, but gives us the ability to work on in the 2014 midterms and change the face of Congress, of the House of Representatives, which I think is doable when you take everything into account of everything that's gone on.
Yeah, I was
going to
say it's nice that you're happy about this, but really, let's remember that Republicans don't seem to have a big problem being out of step with the rest of the country, and you could point to immigration or to gun control, and we've been here with all of that. The battle's far from over.
I'm not saying it's over, but the thing is that, they're gonna lose seats. Whether they lose the majority in the House is up for grabs, but they will lose seats. And part of it is because they're so out of step. You know, there are major Republican donors now. It's this one guy, I'll look it up and find his name, Frank Bruni wrote about it in the Times yesterday, you know, who's giving millions to the Human Rights Campaign to work on international LGBT issues because his son's gay. And more people, just like with the AIDS epidemic, it got to the point where you couldn't demonize people with AIDS because it was your brother, it was your son, it was the people you knew. Same thing is happening here. It's a broader thing. One would have thought after AIDS it would have changed more dramatically then, but now it's taken a little time, and marriage equality has really made a difference in this.
What do we know that this bill would change or do? I have to say, I found more about the debate and people upset about it than I found out what actually would be the result. You can't be fired as a result of...
Based on sexual orientation and gender identity, that both of those are in the bill. So transgender people would also be protected.
Because
I was just going to say, it's just so hard to be a bill against, to be against.
Believe that we haven't had this for a long time. What I found interesting is that versions of this bill date back to the early 1970s when Ed Koch and Bella Abzug put it into the House.
It took a long time. I remember when the Non-Discrimination Act was first passed in the New York State Assembly in 85. You know, it didn't happen until into the new century.
If this one passes, maybe we could have equal rights for women.
Yeah, that would be a lovely thing.
Another issue it's been around for a while and hasn't quite passed.
Absolutely. You know, so lots of people have been working on this in lots of different ways. And, you know, right now in 29 states, there's no state law protecting people, okay, from being fired. And so, and it's the same as true for in 33 states for transgender people, and including New York. There's no protection around for transgender people in New York from being fired from their jobs.
And this is for being fired. And what about getting the job in the first place?
Well, you can't discriminate based on that either. I mean, it's employment period.
Yeah.
You know, you can't say we won't hire you because you're a lesbian anymore. You can say we won't hire you because we think you're incompetent. That's a different story. And, you know, we see that happening everywhere.
Sure.
You know, it's just the reasons are moved over. It's just that when you say you can't hire somebody because of their status, whatever that status is, sometimes, yes, people try to find something else. But culturally, we become accepting of the fact and embracing of the fact that discrimination is wrong against this group of people. And it might take a generation or two, but it'll happen.
To Rosemary's, actually to two of Rosemary's points, one being the fact that, okay, but often the Republicans, you know, you can't always count on them to do the rational thing. So do you think your words? But certainly in this case, you do. You know, you ask the question. You were saying what, 62, 63?
I think we'll have. We need 60 to stop a filibuster. So I think there'll be maybe 62, 61, 62.
And then where does it go from there? It'll go ultimately to
the House.
To the House.
Right.
And
to hell.
Right. And then
goes
it just
to hell after that.
Stays, right? I mean, and then it's going to be.
It'll go through a committee. It'll probably die in a committee somewhere. But again, it gives people the opportunity to make the case that, here we go. Here's the Republicans again, not standing in the way of progress.
And then to Rosemary's other point about other equality issues. Mm-hmm. I mean, so what? Why do these things die? Because we think of we did a whole series on this about equality about a year ago, and it was fascinating to me about what we of how we define that, and what many of us think of as equality, and many of us think that we have, you know, we do have equal rights, and yet we clearly don't in so many different ways.
Well, there's
a
strong feeling that you can't legislate it. And so rather than say legislation is the first step and then you have to have lots of advocacy and support, they just skip that whole legislative thing. We don't really need this. And why do we have to have an equal rights amendment? Right. Have to say you're protected because of your despite your sexual orientation? That shouldn't matter. Well, it shouldn't, so we don't need a law on it.
And then it ends up going to the courts, and then they crucify the judges for being activists for doing the right thing, right. You know. So, You know, the thing is this is...
That's a vicious circle.
It is a vicious circle. But when you look at Republican support for workplace protections, okay, across the country and in local, in, you know, in each of the states and that sort of stuff, 91% of the Republicans who voted for workplace protections were reelected the following term. So there's not, you know, there's not, they're not going to get not reelected. And we're seeing that those who didn't support it don't get reelected because people are saying, this is my kid you're talking about. This is my child. This is my son-in-law. This is my niece. This is my family. This is my best friend you're talking about.
Do you think the Supreme Court ruling will help in this case in the vote? I mean, yes. it certainly forwarded it, but will have any impact in the House?
I don't think anybody who actually thinks rationally has an impact on the House.
Oh.
The GOP in the House.
That sounds extreme, and yet?
Yes. It's rational, isn't it, though?
It is.
It sounds extreme, but, you know, it makes sense. You know, I mean, these people, look, John Boehner spent hundreds and thousands, if not millions, of taxpayer dollars to mount a challenge to the Supreme Court's decision.
Mm.
They finally, I think, have given up. But rationality is not part of the equation there at all. And I'm not sure what is.
We're going to, on that uplifting note, you started happy and you ended up bitter.
I'm still happy. So no, I'm not bitter. I'm very happy that they're irrational because it all ultimately plays into a Democratic House.
We're going to take a break and we'll be back and talk about other issues. We welcome your thoughts. If you're screaming at the radio, well, scream at us. Roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be back after this short break.
It's just the idea of TSA, Joe. It just gets us going.
You're on. Hang on. The mic's on.
Wait. We're just saying, what's our next topic? I mentioned it, and then all of a sudden you're off to the races. Yeah, I was like, hold on. We have more instrumental music we have to play. Hold on.
Oh, it's the music that gets in the way.
No, it's just, well, we're setting an
atmosphere.
Why
do we need a break anyway? We talk for a few minutes, and then we need a break.
It's underwriting.
Wait,
it's important stuff.
We really need that.
It's not really a break, though.
We need the show on the air.
Now let's listen to the important part.
Ray and I
part.
Especially really, really need
yeah,
that.
Exactly.
Yeah, you and I, our pay grades are too high to have to do
right.
that, right?
Yes, yes. Our income is not derived largely in Rio, so it's closer to home.
Let's talk about, because we only have about 5 or 6 minutes, and I want to touch on this. It happened on Friday afternoon, and I don't know a ton of issues that come out of it. Although it is, I don't know. There's stuff to talk about, and that is the shooting that took place at LAX, Los Angeles International Airport, on Friday. The shooter. Apparently, he is still hospitalized. What they're saying now is that by the time officers arrived at his apartment, he had already left because they had apparently his family asked the authorities to check on him after receiving disturbing messages. This, according to the Homeland Security Committee, so the family notified the authorities and said, "We're concerned. We don't know what's going on here. And can you look this?" So they get to his house. He had already left for the airport. He goes in and he shoots a TSA agent, and then apparently, from what we are hearing now and under these new reports. There is some thought that he left and then came back.
He shot the guy.
Right.
And then walked away.
Right.
And then realized that the guy was still moving, so he didn't want that. And he walks back and then shot at him again and then kills the man, the TSA agent.
The TSA agent. And so it is another tragic event having to do with guns in this country.
That's what this is about. It's not about TSA. It's not about...
Oh, but that's... You're right, but what will it be made into? Because I have great fears about seeing TSA people armed. I think
Well, that is a question that's immediately come up of should the TSA agents who are, let's face it, they're on the front lines, and they're saying to
the front lines of what?
Well, of determining who gets on and who gets on and who doesn't get on an airplane. And if somebody becomes violent, if somebody starts to shoot at you, what is there? What security, what armed security is present there besides the National Guard?
Okay, all the years that we've had the TSA, and how many years is that?
Since 2001,
2002. This is the first incident. This is the first violent incident. So I bring that to you. It's horrible. I'm not putting it down at all. I would hate to be that family that's going through this tragedy. But it's the first incident of violence. And while I don't want to make light of this at all, I'm frankly surprised it's the first incident. And number two is these people are not qualified. I think they're not even qualified for the jobs they have, much less give them guns and put them in charge of people.
Well, and not to say that everyone that would put you through that system would be armed. And nor am I advocating that. Just putting it, putting out the argument. Not even playing devil's advocate, but just putting out the argument, because it is to be noted that at least, and I don't know how much of this is mandated and how much of it isn't. But whenever I go through, you see at least four National Guard troops there who are heavily armed, who are on either side. So I feel like there's protection there, right?
There's a call for more local police to be involved with TSA.
I just don't understand the scenario that he shot the guy, walked away, and nobody called anybody. Was he alone? Was this TSA agent alone somewhere? And this guy shot him. So that I don't understand that
it's
whole
a
scenario.
Huge and busy airport, and I think it was just the shock of it. It wasn't like he walked away and then 20 minutes later sauntering back.
No, you know? From what I read, he walked away, he was going up an escalator and saw him, the guy was moving and went back down. It just didn't make sense to me. If he had the time to go up the escalator, where were the first responders, you know, to get this guy? So, but really for me, this is about getting the guns off the streets and people who are mentally ill having access to guns. That's what this is really about. Right. Bottom line.
Pulled out an assault rifle and open fire.
Nobody needs
an assault
rifle.
Nobody
needs an assault rifle.
It's good you mention that.
And it was as evidenced by the note that he left and by the note that he left his parents, this was a conscious decision to kill, in particular, TSA employee. And not a targeted employee, but someone within the TSA. So he went to a security checkpoint, shot the TSA officer at point blank range, according to an affidavit accompanying the criminal complaint against him. He then went up on escalator, and upon seeing the officer apparently continue to move, came back down to shoot him again.
That's what I don't understand.
The TSA officer, Gerardo Hernandez, later died. After shooting Hernandez, the gunman continued through the terminal, firing on two other uniformed TSA officers and a passenger before he was shot by airport police, and he remains in critical condition at the UCLA Medical Center this morning. So we wanted to talk about that issue. There's some really disturbing video out about showing the chaos inside of LAX, which is disturbing in two places. One, that you get to see some of this, and two, that somebody decided to shoot it instead of running like hell, which I think should be the normal response to that. But anyway, we're going to be back and talk about other issues. Roundtable at WAMC.org if you would like to join us and like to share your thoughts. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be back after this short break. Welcome back to our roundtable panel. I'm Joe Donahue, along with Ray Graff, Libby Post, and Rosemary Armeo. And as always, we welcome your comments. We'll get to those in just a minute. There have been a couple.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Let's get to them first.
Yeah.
You want to get to that right away?
Yes. Let's do that right away.
All right. Well, actually, no. Let's do this because I have this on my screen right now. So let's do that, and then I'll put these in a nice order.
Oh boy.
Okay, so let's talk about Edward Snowden. A couple of interesting articles, a couple of interesting points to be made. One, from CNN, leaked classified documents show the U.S. National Security Agency and its British counterpart are among the, quote, worst offenders of mass surveillance without oversight, according to an open letter purportedly written by Edward Snowden and published Sunday in a German magazine. The publication of the letter, titled A Manifesto for the Truth, comes as leaks by the former NSA contract analyst have really upset U.S.-European relations amid allegations that the NSA and the U.K.'s government communications headquarters monitored the communication data of some world leaders. The Snowden wrote, "The world has learned a lot in a short amount of time about irresponsibility, operated security agencies, and at times criminal surveillance programs. Sometimes the agencies try to avoid controls." What do we make of this?
Okay, we're lining up here for a battle.
Okay,
here we go.
I'm a Snowden supporter. I believe that the information he did not give to enemies, did not spy upon, but told the American people about, was that we were being spied on by our government, and our government has conducted intelligence operations beyond what we ever knew of before. I think that was important information. I'm glad to have it. It sparked a whole new debate that we're in the middle of now on what and how intelligence should operate, which, by the way, this country is long overdue for. Intelligence played a role in why we're in Iraq in the first place. I wish Snowden had been around then. And I understand politically why he cannot and probably will never get amnesty or any kind of clemency in the United States. But in my mind, he has done a service. I wish there were more whistleblowers. And the action of the Obama administration has been to consistently act against whistleblowers in the harshest of ways to shut them down.
My question, I guess, though, has to do with it does seem that there's damage being done.
To whom, by what?
Well, let's just say, do you feel that there is, I mean, obviously there's damage being done to our relationships with other countries.
Oh, pshaw. Even as Dianne Feinstein said about, no one knew that we were looking at Angela Merkel, for example, and her response was something like, "I think the Academy Award could go to the White House, and for best supporting role, it'll go to the EU." They knew it, but the American people didn't know about it, and that's the part that I think is very interesting. I want to know about it. I want to know what my government's doing.
Libby Post.
Come on, say it. Well, she thinks Snowden should be in jail. He's
I think he. Yes, and I know this is going to surprise a lot of people out there, and I'm sure you'll get some mail from people who are just shocked. But I do think he committed treason, and I don't think that we should be in the business of publicizing government secrets to the detriment of our national safety. And yes, okay, it went to the press, but the press is no longer just local. It went global, and now the folks that would like to see us be undermined have information to further undermine our security.
How can our security be undermined by this information that we're listening in on everything?
It's not so much the listening in on everything. It's about showing the raw underbelly of how we do business, and by doing that you expose our vulnerabilities, and people who want to exploit our vulnerabilities will figure out a way how to do that.
Goes beyond what critics have said, which their main contention here is that since the Snowden revelations, Al Qaeda and others have switched the way they communicate, as if that wouldn't happen anyway, as if that hadn't happened already since 2001 when the 9/11.
Bin Laden was using a courier. I mean, he wasn't even using electronics, and maybe he did once, and that did him in. But he had people on the ground carrying his messages. Right. So I think you're onto something there.
Yeah, I don't think Snowden's revelation. I mean, we heard the same thing with WikiLeaks. Oh, my God, this is going to expose people to mistreatment all over the world. Now, there actually, I do actually know of some instances in WikiLeaks where failure to edit that material properly. Remember, it wasn't all handled by newspapers, by professionals, and WikiLeaks itself just leaked out some. There actually was some damage done, I have to say.
All right. So,
in this case, no. It was all.
Well, there's damage
done
to our credibility on the international stage.
Our credibility, like we weren't doing well with that anyway.
Well,
but here's my issue with it: is who, and this just comes, I think, with hubris why do you take it upon yourself then to say, even though I have signed this, that I have taken this oath, I'm not going to share this information. I'm going to be secretive. I'm this contracted player, and now I feel that I am above the law, and I'm going to take this information.
Well, he obviously didn't feel he was above the law, or he would not run away. And he obviously is going to feel the impact of the wrath of the United States for the rest rest of his life. I don't think he'll get back. I don't. You saw it this weekend. There was a question to the heads of the foreign affairs committees, right, at both the House and the Senate, and they both categorically said there will be no clemency for, right, Snowden. So he is going to pay the price for it. And there is the hubris of, what is he, 29 years old, saying, I'm going to take on the U.S. government. And yet we as consumers of information about our own government ought to be thankful that we found out about it. We should not have had to find out about,
okay,
it.
What did we do with that information that we all assumed anyway?
We did not all assume that. I never assumed that my government was listening in on every phone call or had the ability to do that to every citizen in the United States.
Really?
There's been
really?
Really?
My phones were tapped a very long time ago. No, I'm serious. I'm serious. I lived in a collective with a bunch of lesbians out in the country, and we know our phones were tapped.
Obviously communist then.
Well,
yeah,
there is that in my, right, by my bloodline, but, you know, we know our phones are tapped. You know, I'm very clear about what happens. I also knew we weren't doing anything wrong.
You know, a lot of my friends overseas say, oh, that's ridiculous.
I mean, we call it spying for
a reason. But we didn't. We didn't know it. Spying is what you do to your enemy, not to your own people, Joe. And there have been all kinds of protests about this since Snowden revealed it. And that, to me, indicates that others like me are shocked and horrified and do not think it should be happening.
Did he have any other recourse, do you think?
Did who have any other recourse?
Snowden, in the sense of going about this any other way, ooh, to bring this information out without it.
He and the reporters helping him get out the information of Manassas, he maintains, no, it's really easy to say, well, he should have tried. Yeah, he should have.
Yeah.
He maintains, no, that it would not have gone anywhere. It did not go anywhere.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll rile up the panel some more.
Okay, so we can close those two windows, right?
Yeah. Okay. both those windows can be closed.
Uh-oh.
Excellent. And we'll be back and open new windows. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC. Welcome back to The Roundtable panel. I'm Joe Donahue. Rosemary Armeo is here, Libby Post, and Ray Graff. And we welcome your comments, roundtable at WAMC.org. Sarah writes in and says, hey, thanks again. Whenever there are fresh voices, I love listening to your discussions. So that's just a nice kind of get you
we
off
like
on a good start.
Thank you.
A good start Monday. Joel makes this point, nothing like expressing only one side this morning. I might have to listen to Rush Limbaugh to get me back to the center after listening to your discussion on the House.
We didn't say anything nice about the House at all. Can we try to do that?
Well,
something nice about the House of Representatives right now. Quick, think.
The Democrats are great.
Oh, my. Oh, that's
and there are some really good. I
get
have
us
to
some
say,
more letters.
Okay, no.
Mega dittos.
There are some good Republicans who are going to come out for this bill, you know, in the House. So I appreciate their bravery.
We also got this from Andrew, who's a frequent business traveler. TSA is not responsible for determining who gets on a plane, which is what I said. They're only responsible for determining that the people who are going to get on a plane are not carrying weapons or other dangerous items specifically prohibited from being brought on an airplane.
Yes, but not electronic devices.
Okay.
But now you can use them.
But it seems like they turn people away, so I don't really understand. But anyway, let's not get started about all the other people with the TSA, its workers, ineffective airport screening, the not on my watch mentality of Homeland Security leadership, and the Fourth Amendment violations of people who want to or need to fly. There have been a number of court cases where TSA overstepped their bounds at a checkpoint, believing they're actually in the business of being police officers,
right?
And subsequently had their efforts rebuked by the courts since they are not, most definitely not, law enforcement officers.
Good letter.
Okay. Well, we're grading them now.
Yeah.
Done some really horrible things. You know, I'm glad they're there, but some of these guys, they, like you said, they take it to the extreme.
They've done some horrible things. I am not glad they are there.
Jim writes, this is about Snowden. Jim writes, I agree with Libby. I believe it was Dianne Feinstein who said that if Snowden had issues, he could have addressed them to the House Intelligence Committee, which is made up of a bipartisan team who would be best able to deal with the concerns and held his nuclear option as an ace in the pocket. So those are the letters that we have, and we will certainly keep accepting them. We'd love to hear from you.
Oh, really?
WAMC.org. Well, I mean, we have 10 more minutes, so if you want to get on the show, we have 10 more minutes. Do you understand?
Yeah, the server will keep letting them
Well, I don't know about that.
Yeah, okay, fine.
Sometimes that's a difficult proposition. All right, let's go back to our topics for today, and we'll talk about healthcare.gov. I just want your thoughts on this, because did anybody else read this, the Washington Post article?
I tried to get through most of it.
No. The Washington Post article about healthcare.gov, it was sort of like went wrong.
Yes, that's fascinating.
How political fear was pitted against technical needs.
Right.
And it was in yesterday's Washington Post. It's a really long, in-depth article about what happened, and there are a lot of blame to go around, and basically the point of this, I'll just read you the first paragraph, but
this is called in the business a TikTok, where you go back and you show every tick of the clock how something so massively gone wrong began, and I think the article really does it.
I do too, and it seems to me that it gives you a really good sense of what indeed went wrong.
Right. No one with bad intentions, no mm-hmm. one doing something overtly horrible, fireable, and yet the mass of all of these things going wrong is the mess we have today.
What they basically say in the article is that there was this very insular nature to the entire project. And the rollout, which has been labeled disastrous by most, David Cutler, who is a Harvard professor and a health advisor to President Obama's 2008 campaign, said they were running the biggest startup in the world, and they didn't have anyone who had run a startup or even run a business. The White House's leadership of the immense project building new health insurance marketplaces for an estimated 24 million Americans without coverage is one of several key reasons that the president's signature domestic policy achievement has become a self-inflicted injury for the administration. According to the Washington Post, based on interviews with more than two dozen current and former administration officials and outsiders who worked alongside them, the project was hampered by the White House's political sensitivity to Republican hatred of the law, sensitivity so intense that the president's aides ordered that some work be slowed down or remain secret for fear of feeding the opposition. Inside the Department of Health and Human Services Centers for Medicare and Medicaid, the main agency responsible for the exchanges, there was no single administrator whose full-time job, this is unbelievable
right.
to me,
yes.
There was no single administrator whose full-time job was to manage the project. Republicans also made clear that they would block funding while some outside IT companies were hired to build the website. So all of this is going on.
All happening at the same. Yeah, one of the most interesting parts to me was how state after state began saying, we're not going to build an exchange.
And that's
so they realize
what did
now,
it.
Yeah, they realize now that, okay, the federal system is getting bigger and bigger.
Right.
And there's no money in
that's
the bill
right.
for
this
the
is,
federal system.
This all goes back to the states that decided
exactly.
they weren't going to do their own exchanges. If 40 of the states had done their own exchange, we wouldn't be in this situation.
Right.
And, you know, did it get screwed up? Yeah. You know, is it going to get fixed? Yes. Is this going to be a blip? It might be like more like a pimple on the history. Yes. But ultimately, people are going to be able to get health care. You know, when we were on last week, I had a client text me who said, oh, I just went on the New York site. I got my health insurance in 10 minutes.
Really?
Yeah. So, you know, this will get worked out, but this is politics at its worst and most
you know,
cynical.
It's more than just politics, though. The value of this article is you find it's just when human beings take on a big project.
Mm-hmm.
What has to happen
right.
for it to roll out? You have to have some luck. You have to have lots of organization, way more than you think you would. You have the president saying, make this happen. You would think that would be enough, but it isn't.
But then also be secretive. Don't give anybody else anything, ammunition, so they can use it against us later on, because they're still fighting the law.
Or even use the information you have that should help you. The thing we're talking about, as the states begin to shut down and the federal system is taking on more and more importance, there's no money for it because they had not planned on it. And they can't. They believe go to the House, although maybe Rush Limbaugh has something different to say about this, but they can't go to the House and say, give us money so we can pick up the slack here. And instead, they don't say anything.
Right. See, I think they played that wrong.
They should have put
this out there in the public constantly and put the GOP on the defensive about this. And they didn't. And that was a bad move.
They could have said, you are going to see massive problems with this because you're not handling it right.
Because it's not being handled right in the House. Right. You know, that's
fascinating article for those interested.
Yeah. Really, I was just going to say it's if you Google healthcare.gov, Washington Post, the article will come up, and it's five or six internet pages, but it's a lengthy article, but it's very well done, and I think has some really good points as to how we got in the position that we're in.
So here's a place where you and I both agree that keeping secrets is not a good idea.
Very good.
Okay.
No traitors activity here.
That's right. Yeah.
Common ground.
Let's cue the kumbaya.
I like it.
Yeah, okay, good.
All right, so let's end on this issue, which is, I think, an interesting issue and one that we've talked about before, both in this program. I know we've had discussions on Vox Pop as well. And this is about herbal supplements. There was an article in the science section of the New York Times, I guess published today, actually. Americans spend an estimated $5 billion a year on unproven herbal supplements that promise everything from fighting off colds to curbing hot flashes to boosting memory. But now there is a new reason for supplement buyers to beware. DNA tests show that many pills labeled as healing herbs are little more than powdered rice and weeds.
And not the good kind of weed, either.
No.
What's the good kind, Libby? Using a test called DNA barcoding, a kind of genetic fingerprinting that has also been used to help uncover labeling fraud in the commercial seafood industry, it's not always scallops, by the way. just so you know.
Or crab salad.
That's right. Canadian researchers tested 44 bottles of popular supplements sold by 12 companies. They found that many were not what they claimed to be, and that pills labeled as popular herbs were often diluted or even replaced entirely with fillers like soybean, wheat, and rice. Consumer advocates and scientists say the research provides more evidence that the herbal supplement industry is riddled with questionable practices. Industry representatives argue that any problems are not widespread. For the study, the researchers selected popular medicinal herbs and then randomly bought different brands of those products from stores and outlets in Canada and the United States to avoid singling out any company. They did not disclose any product names. So,
well, all I can say is hope springs eternal. This is the same snake oil business you've seen in the United States for years and years. And even myself, after reading this article and knowing we were going to discuss it, I then turned to the next article I wanted to read. It was about the drug, the little pills that Oprah took to lose 28 pounds. And I thought about ordering them. Because I want there to be a pill that makes you lose 28 pounds.
Yeah, you don't need to lose 28 pounds.
You disappear. Now, me, yes, you know. But
that's it. That's how these drugs get sold.
Because
you're hoping for a
miracle.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, I can't
tell
you how many times I go online and there's the commercial that comes up with raspberry ketones.
Yes.
Right, and it'll help you lose weight. And Dr. Oz said so. And then he goes on his show and says, "I never said anything like that." You know, so it's
snake oil.
It's well, you know, some of the herbal remedies, when they're made correctly, can be helpful. But when it's
how do you know what's in there?
But what do you know what's in there? And
because believe it or not, not all of us have barcoders, DNA barcoders.
We don't have one in your back pocket.
No, I do. Well, yes, that's what that is.
Oh, okay.
Oh, hey. All right.
But that's so, what's the solution? The FDA can't handle what they're doing now.
Right.
Where's the money to hire some more inspectors? So we can take a look at herbal supplements as well.
And I don't know about you, but I'm so paranoid. Unless I know what I'm taking. I mean, in that little pill, it could be anything. And I guess, you know, if it's coming
a lot
from
of it had laxatives. Did you read that?
Yes.
Part?
Yeah.
They're
that always terribly makes you feel better.
Yeah, yeah.
So.
Yeah,
well, you lose
it must
weight.
Be okay. I mean, I'm going
you know.
To the bathroom.
Right.
Yeah.
Work for Elvis, right?
Yeah. Well, no, that was
no, that was the opposite.
Ah, okay.
Those were barbiturates.
Well, on that note, thank everyone for their participation. Thank you for all of you. Thank you for being here.
You're
Rosemary,
welcome.
Libby,
you're welcome.
Ray, thank you. We'll be back tomorrow. Roundtable at WAMC.org if you'd like to weigh in. Coming up next, the roundtable continues. We're going to talk to Ray Davies of the Kinks. You're listening to the Roundtable on WAMC.